it please the Court, my name is Paul Stone. I represent the Attorney General of the United States. There's two general issues for the Court to consider in this case. First, whether the Court's prior decision stating that Section 1252A2B2 barred jurisdiction over the rest of Samir's action should have ended this case. Second, if not, whether the District Court correctly found jurisdiction and ordered the government to either parole Samir into the United States or to place him in removal proceedings. As an initial matter, the Court's prior decision...
Before you get into that, let me ask you, what's wrong with the following argument? You've got a regulation which says that if parole is revoked, the alien shall be restored to the status that he or she had at the time of parole. Well, at the time of parole, his status was that he had an application for adjustment of status. So why wouldn't the effect of this regulation be that when parole is revoked, he's applying for adjustment of status?
Well, Your Honor, there's a couple of problems with that. First of all, that applying for adjustment of status is not a legal status.
Oh, baloney.
His legal status was...
I don't get that. This regulation is very clear. It provides for advance parole. It says you can come back. And it says that if it happens to be revoked, you're restored to your previous status, which in his case is a guy who's illegally in the United States, but he's applied for adjustment of status. Now it seems to be that because you won't let him back in, he can't pursue his application for adjustment of status. Isn't that your position?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. Then the regulation doesn't make any sense, right? It says if you revoke, you restore the person to his status, and his status is applying for adjustment of status, and now you're saying, no, he can't continue his application because he's not in the United States.
Well, that's because, Your Honor, that regulation...
You're violating the regulation.
Your Honor, the reason for that is that regulation applies to an alien who's actually been paroled at the border into the United States.
That's not what the regulation says. That's not what the regulation says. Read the regulation.
Well, Your Honor,
where does the regulation say anything like that that says what you're saying? It says parole should be terminated upon, you know, written notice to the alien, and he or she shall be restored to the status that he or she had at the time of parole. I don't see anything there about discretion or anything. It just seems flat.
The problem, Your Honor.
And, of course, you look at his form, right? You look at his... I mean, you put it in this brief. You look at his form. You look at his, you know, I-512. Nothing in there about this catch-22 that you're playing with him.
Well, Your Honor, the problem is that they're having an application for adjustment of status is not a status. And there's been
What is that gibberish about? That's not in the regulation. What game are you playing with these people? You make clear to, so you're dealing with a class of people. They're illegal aliens, but you know they've married someone or what have you, so they want to have a shot at their adjusting their status. So you say to them, "Well, fine, we'll let you leave the country. We'll let you leave the country, and if we decide, you know, we don't like this parole we've granted you, we'll revoke it in writing." And then you'll be back where you started from. I'm not saying they have to admit him to the United States. I'm saying the regulation says he has to be allowed to continue pursuing his adjustment of status.
Your Honor, this is anything but a game, and I apologize.
Of course it's a game. I mean, look at your form. You don't give these people any warning. You say to them they're going to be restored to their status if their parole is revoked. And, of course, that's exactly what you're not doing with this person.
Well, Your Honor, I'll give you examples of some other... there was a notice in the Federal Register on the eligibility of arriving aliens that we cite in our brief.
Yeah, and that's inconsistent with the regulation.
It's
inconsistent with the regulation.
That makes clear that the
act. It's inconsistent with the regulation, this notice.
Well, Your Honor, regulation?
Look, the regulation is very clear. What is ambiguous about the regulation? Tell me what the ambiguity is.
You're right, Your Honor. The regulation isn't ambiguous.
Right.
The problem is that Mr. Samira has misinterpreted it to believe that he has a special status different than other illegal
aliens. If it's unambiguous, I don't see what the room for misinterpretation is.
Well, because, Your Honor, I don't see it as ambiguous, and I don't think you do either. The problem is we're both not seeing it as saying something different in this lack of ambiguity. And that is the way I interpret it is that having an adjustment of status application doesn't make him different than other aliens who are illegally present.
I don't understand it. Of course it makes a difference. It says that if he's an illegal immigrant, he's an illegal immigrant, if his parole is terminated, his status, which means his status to seek adjustment of status, is restored. That's what it says.
His advance parole was terminated when he was outside the United States. When that happened, his adjustment of status application...
When he was terminated, he'd get a written notice. What do you mean? Revocation is different from termination? What are you talking about?
He received written notice of revocation in...
Now we know what happens when you receive written notice of revocation. Your status is restored. That's what it says.
He was outside the United States.
What difference does it make? Of course he's outside of the United States because he's been given this advance parole to leave the United States.
It's impossible to be an alien illegally present in the United States when you're in Ireland.
Oh, come on.
Mr. Stone, let me ask you. Why is the government fighting this issue so hard? Is this a tactic that the government is using with other people besides Mr. Samira?
I'm not aware of this happening in other cases, at least where it's been challenged to this extent.
I can't imagine that it would not be challenged.
The government seeks to use, and even the district court in this case found that there's no indication the government did this purposefully. And as this court pointed out, its first
didn't do what purposefully? Revoke his...
Tried to keep him out of it and tried to informally remove him by revoking it.
So why is this so important for our national security that you're fighting this so hard, just letting him have a hearing on his adjustment of status?
Well, Your Honor, it's to preserve the executive's direct discretion over advanced parole and over aliens who are entirely outside the United States. In this case, he actually left the country 5 months earlier than he said. The court pointed this out in his early decision. He left the country 5 months earlier than he said he would in his advanced parole application. The information was discovered about 4 months before he said he was going to leave, and it was immediately revoked. So, had he stayed, it may have been revoked before he even left.
It was revoked while he was gone.
That's correct.
For security reasons.
That's correct.
That's all we know. Now, obviously, I was on the first one, this is what we did the first time. Said there's no jurisdiction because he's out of the country. He can't file a habeas. So he's stuck. We acknowledge this was, he's caught short. There's nothing he can do. Now, the question is, and this went to the Supreme Court on cert, and they're making exactly the same arguments that they're making here, saying that we were wrong. If we're wrong the first time, then okay. But I look at it the way I guess the government and the Justice Department does, is this was over. And I don't know, and we don't know, and I'm not sure there's any way we can find out why, for security reasons, it was revoked. But it was revoked, and he was notified of it when he arrived at Shannon.
That's
why he couldn't come back.
Right.
Now, I guess what I have to do is understand why our first opinion was wrong, and I recognize there's some disagreement.
Your Honor, I don't think it was wrong, but even if it was wrong, there are ways to correct that. And the way to correct that, Your Honor, is by petitioning for a rehearing en banc, and by petitioning for
rescission
in the Supreme Court. So those have been exhausted. So, Your Honor, that was the opportunity to correct it. It's not to continue the case for another 6 years and then... take another shot at it. So, in any event, we think it was correctly decided. The reason for that is because the statute itself makes the decision to parole or to deny parole.
What if he were from Mexico? He's an illegal immigrant. Then he marries an American, and then he applies for adjustment of status, and he gets advanced parole, and he goes visit his family in Mexico. And when he comes back, when he shows up at the port of entry in Mexico airport or what have you, the immigration officers say, well, actually, you know, we think we have enough we think we have enough Mexicans in the United States, so we're not letting you in. Now, there's no remedy for that in your view?
In this case,
it's just like this guy, except the reason for not admitting him is not that he's a security risk, but that the immigration authorities have decided, you know, this immigration has become very controversial in the United States, so they're just not going to let any Mexicans that they've paroled back in.
So he had advanced parole when he left Mexico?
Yeah, just like this case, right?
In that case, Your Honor, he would be arriving at a land port where he would be put in expedited removal proceedings.
He visits Mexico, then he flew to Ireland. Flying back, and he's getting in, you know, and he's in with these same people, but they have a different pot. It's not security risk. They just don't like Mexicans. They think they're enough in the United States.
Well, Your Honor,
Does he have a remedy? Does he have a remedy?
That would appear to be.
Does he have a remedy?
In that case, it's different in that.
Answer my question. Does he have a remedy, yes or no?
Your Honor.
Then you can qualify it. You just answer it yes or no.
Your Honor.
You answer it yes or no. Don't call me Your Honor. He has no remedy. Okay. At least your position is consistent.
Isn't you say at the point of reentry?
No, Your Honor, that's at a pre-inspection station where the only decision is made whether he's admissible or not. At a port of entry, it's a different case. At a port of entry, he would have expedited removal proceedings and potentially also could
What happens when you hit the border?
Service.
What happens when you hit the border? Because I don't know the answer to that.
At the border, that's where you get the expedited removal proceedings, potentially also petition for writ of habeas corpus.
But you get a hearing with that.
Yes, Your Honor.
That, I think that's the question.
Yes.
Well, then the answer is not no, it's yes.
Judge Posner specified that he was traveling through Shannon, Ireland.
He's coming from Mexico.
But coming directly from Mexico,
The hypothetical that Judge Posner just gave.
Yes, Your Honor.
So this is totally asinine. If he comes directly from Mexico, he gets the hearing. If he comes via Shannon Airport, he doesn't. And you say there's no remedy, no matter how grotesque the reasons given for denying entry. And I cannot believe American law is as stupid as that.
Well, Your Honor, that was what I was trying to hedge, as this Court has said that in
some all right, tell me how you're hedging.
Well, this Court has said in some extraordinary circumstances there may be jurisdiction.
I think we have the extraordinary circumstance.
Your Honor, the distinction between aliens and present.
It's just an accident that he came through Shannon, right? If he came from anywhere else or many other places, he'd get his hearing.
Well, it's actually not an accident, Your Honor.
It's so ridiculous. He can only come back through Shannon Airport?
One of the things Congress directed the Attorney General to do was set up...
Was that his only way he could come back to the United States?
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor.
What do you mean you're not aware of it? You know perfectly well that's not true.
I don't think so. He could have gone through other... If he had flown directly...
To the United States instead of going through Shannon,
yes,
he would have been at the point where he would have the right. That's the case. That was not the case here. That's why... You know, it may be technical, it may be something else, but that's the reason. And there was an injection for security reasons.
Correct.
And that's why it was denied reentry. If he had flown directly from wherever he was coming from before he went to Ireland, he'd flown directly to the United States, he would have gone through the other procedure, the example we used with Mexico.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So this is truly asinine, right? There is no conceivable reason to have a distinction of that sort.
Yes, there is, Your Honor, and this is why. If Congress set up pre-inspection stations for a number of reasons. One was to ensure that more inadmissible aliens weren't wouldn't arrive at the border. And the second is to keep out, Congress directed the Attorney General to set them up in places where aliens who are national security risks would have more of a tendency to fly.
Oh, of course, Shannon Airport, the Irish, they're notorious, Irish Republican Army. They want to come in and overthrow the government of the United States, right? Right? How'd they pick Shannon?
Well, Shannon was very early on in the early 80s. That was under the Attorney General's discretion to place inspectors abroad.
Yeah, well, that's the one there was, that was the, that's over with in Ireland, right? I mean, that's long over with.
It was one of the first, and it was...
But it's totally arbitrary. This is all arbitrary and ridiculous. This person is not being kept out because he's a security risk as a result of his involvement with the Irish Republican Army, right? It's a pure access, a pure windfall from your standpoint that he happens to come back through Shannon. Of course, you've given them no warning of any of this, right? Well, that's how you can trap these people.
That's not true, Your Honor. The law does provide that.
So, look, this guy doesn't go... Look, this guy, this person doesn't go do research in your incomprehensible set of regulations. You have a regulation clearly applicable which supports his position, and you have his I-512 form. Reads the form, he figures, yeah, I can come back. And if it's revoked, I still have my adjustment of status application.
Your Honor, I see I'm out of time. I'd reserve some time for rebuttal, so...
You can have some time for rebuttal. Okay, thank you, Mr. Stone. Mr. Flesman?
Please support Mr. Stone. As you know, my name is Mark Fusser from Sunshine Yath and Rosenthal, and I appear on behalf of Dr. Sabri Samira. In our briefs, we've discussed several reasons to reject the government's argument that the statutory bar to discretionary leave should defeat Dr. Samira's constitutional and statutory arguments. However, the Supreme Court's intervening case of Kuchana versus Holder suggests a more basic reason. Based on Kuchana, this court's conclusion in Severo 1, with due respect to the panel member who was the Judge Moran lacked jurisdiction to review the revocation of advanced parole, is incorrect and should be reversed. Advanced parole.
Now, you made all these arguments, PFR and before the Supreme Court on cert. Now, you say there's something intervening?
All the arguments made for the en banc rehearing and to the Supreme Court for our...
Said this opinion was wrong for several reasons.
I'm sorry?
Said that this opinion was wrong for several reasons.
That's correct, but they were all made prior to the Supreme Court holding in Kuchana, which we say controls in the situation. Advanced parole, unlike parole, is a creature of regulation. The government admits that in their brief at page 24, in their opening brief. To quote Kuchana, Congress barred a court review of discretionary decisions only when Congress itself sets out the Attorney General's discretionary authority in the statute. To distinguish between advanced parole and parole is granted at the port of entry, that is to say, at the borders, to one who is seeking to physically enter the United States. For example, when one is applying for or a pending adjustment of status application or some other legal request. Advanced parole, on the other hand, is a creature of regulation created by the Attorney General for his convenience, and it's an authorization to seek parole at the port of entry. It was created for one who intends to physically depart from the United States and to return to it. The government says that Dr. Samira never had parole because if he had been given parole, its regulations would have required it to give him a notice before revoking it. The advanced parole, however, the government now equivocates in the post-Kuchana world. In pre-Kuchana, the government argued that advanced parole isn't actually parole, but it is the creature of regulation. It's not a type of parole, and that is at pages 24 to 26 of the briefs, and we agree with that. If it is a product of or a creature of regulation, then it falls directly under the authority of Kuchana. The regulatory-based discretion doesn't bar it under 1252. In the post-Kuchana world, the government now seems to equivocate and to call advanced parole a hybrid and tries to argue that Kuchana doesn't control but they're wrong. With respect to the your point, Judge Posner, that Dr. Samiro was in the country unlawfully, that is not precisely correct. He was in the country initially as a student under a student visa. Then, he never fell out of status. Then he applied for adjustment of status several times. During that period, it is a gray area. But I think what the agency labels those folks as persons residing under color of law or protocol. So he was, while he did not have legal status, he was not here illegally because his adjustment of status application was pending. And there was never, as far as the government has demonstrated to anyone, there was never a lapse. The government has manufactured...
There was never a removal proceeding against him?
There has never been a removal proceeding against him. There's never been one initiated. He has never been given the rights of a removal proceeding. The government has manufactured Dr. Samir's predicament by granting him advance parole, promising that upon his return to the United States, he would return to his family and resume his application for adjustment of status. As Judge Moran said, the government is applying the INA regulations under the gotcha policy. That is quoting the judge. By doing so, the government now claims that Dr. Samiro is like any other individual, any other alien who's requesting entry into the United States, ignoring Dr. Samiro's 15-year lawful residence, his home, his life, his family, his
citizen children. What is the basis for his applications for adjustment of status?
He has lived. He lived here for 15 years. He was here legally. He received a master's degree, a doctorate degree. He had a job here. He was legally working here. His children were all born here. He was married and owned a home here. So his request here was based on his. This was his life. This was his home.
Did he marry an American citizen?
I'm sorry?
Did he marry an American citizen?
No. The government also argues that anyone traveling to the United States, potentially even including a resident, a permanent resident, or even a citizen, if there's some suspicion about the validity of the individual's passport, who passes through a pre-inspection station, has no procedural rights of review. The government creates an irrational distinction between travelers who pass through pre-inspection stations and those who pass through ports of entry, exactly what you pointed out, Judge Posner. The constitutional and statutory rights of an individual traveling to the United States cannot be based on the vagaries of flight plans. The government's theory, even when an alien who arrives at a port of entry via fraud would have more rights than Dr. Samiro, who went to a pre-inspection statement by serendipity, even though he was a 15-year lawful resident.
Mr. Plessner, could I ask you to address Mr. Stone's point about the discrepancies in the dates? Is that correct as a factual matter, and does it matter as a legal matter?
Are you referring to the dates as to when he said he was going to travel under his advance parole and when he actually traveled? Mm-hmm. I actually am not aware of that. I know the reason for his travel, although I think to follow with your second question, it really doesn't matter. The reason for his travel, which was stated, was his mother was ill, and he had not seen his mother in several years, and so he was traveling to see his mother. When he actually decided to go and why it matters whether he went in January or December as opposed to March or April doesn't matter because it was all within the time frame that he was allowed to go under the advance parole document. The real issue in this case is the government treats Dr. Samiro as if he is coming to the United States for the first time, but the advance parole document acknowledged his residence in this country. Dr. Samiro possessed rights associated with his life in the United States, the presence of his family, home, and his job. Under the government's theory, if Dr. Samiro had, by serendipity, taken a different path so that he wasn't inspected until he reached O'Hare International Airport, that any potential exclusion from the United States would have had to have been accomplished only as permitted by the statute and by a removal proceeding, as mandated by Congress. The government claims that the procedural rules in the INA do not apply at pre-inspection stations. The government can make up whatever procedures it wishes or none at all, and no court has the jurisdiction to review it. The implications of the government's theory is enormous. Congress has mandated that there are that DHS, Department of Homeland Security, which are obviously, you know, we're talking about now, establish that at least 10 pre-inspection stations around the world. But there is no legal prohibition against DHS establishing even more or pre-inspection stations to in every location where an international flight originates and comes to the United States. If such a thing were to occur, it would be then the agency, not Congress, who would have complete control over the procedures and the rights of people entering the United States, including those that apply to permanent residents or even potentially citizens if there's some discrepancy about their passport. The statute regarding pre-inspection stations does not specify a type of procedure for making those decisions, not for people claiming citizenship, not for returning permanent residents, not for asylum seekers, not for anyone. The government argues that the agency does not have to provide any procedural protections at pre-inspection stations because Congress did not outline a procedural framework at those stations. That argument is simply wrong. The Immigration and Naturalization Act, Section 240, provides a default procedure for admission decisions. That is a removal hearing. And absent a procedure in the statute creating pre-inspection stations, the INA removal procedures apply. It is mandatory by statute that he be provided a removal proceeding. The government also argues that it could have entered an expedited removal order under 235B1. We have argued in our brief that an expedited removal order is unavailable to Dr. Samira, number one, because he resided here more than 2 years, and under the statute, if you reside here longer than 2 years, you are not subject to expedited removal proceedings. And number two, they didn't actually do so. So the idea that he would have been is completely irrelevant to the argument because they didn't apply any removal proceeding for him. The government's argument that the procedural rules in the INA simply do not apply at pre-inspection.
Is there any information about the nature of the security risk that he presents? Has that?
There is none. None was provided. There is a specific statute, however, as you know, 235C for expedited removal hearings for terrorists. Again, they did not utilize that procedure.
So there's just nothing in the record about the nature of the security risk?
No, there's nothing in the record. They didn't provide any, and they didn't invoke the 235C procedure. I think that's actually a very good point. I think the government has tried to frame, both publicly and throughout the seven-year duration of the proceeding, that Dr. Samira is a bad guy and he's a threat to our country. I don't think anyone in this room wants terrorists to be allowed to come in and out of the country. But the government, from 9/11, the Patriot Act, the 235 procedure, has set up enormous structures to prevent terrorists from entering the United States, as is appropriate. If there is evidence that Dr. Samir should be excluded on that basis, then that is the provision they should have invoked, and they did not do so. We don't think that this court needs to reach the constitutional arguments because of the constitutional avoidance principles. We think you.
But what about the question of jurisdiction? So I believe in our previous opinion, we said that habeas corpus was unavailable, and I think that's. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So you're appealing to the mandamus statute, and what about Section 1331, federal question jurisdiction based on the regulation? Is that a possible remedy?
Yes, as we argue in our brief, we believe it is a possible remedy. I believe that the government argued that we did not preserve that below. That is incorrect. But yes, we are of the opinion that that statute applies. The government, there was issues with whether or not that was argued properly below, but I believe that that it was argued in our brief. If you don't reach our on the statutory grounds, we think that the government has repeatedly fails to acknowledge the constitutional principles that the Supreme Court outlined in Ossentrager, that as a citizen's non-citizen's connections with the United States grows, so does the individual's constitutional rights. Dr. Samir's residence, lawful admission, his citizen children, his job, home, his application for resident status, his grant of advance parole, his rights under the statute, his property interest in his application, all have increased Dr. Samir's connections with the United States and have given him stronger constitutional status, which the government completely ignores. The process that the agency afforded Dr. Samir was absolutely minimal. There was no pre-deprivation hearing. There was no post-deprivation hearing. There was no right to contest. There was no notice. There was no service of counsel of record. There was nothing to minimize the risks of erroneous deprivation, and if he has any rights at all, the procedure which was afforded him was ignored. The government's actions were below the minimum, and they violated the statute, and its interpretation of the statute is unconstitutional. The doctrine of constitutional doubt applies. We argued that below in our summary judgment motion. I believe the government incorrectly stated in the reply brief that that we waived that. If you look at pages 11 and 12 of our brief, you will see that it's argued there. If a statute is ambiguous and one interpretation would be subject to grave doubts about its constitutionality, courts prefer the alternate interpretation. If this court reaches the constitutional issues, which it does not have to do, Dr. Samir wins because of the grave constitutional issues raised by the government's interpretation of the statute. The government has peppered the court with arguments supporting the act that violates the removal statute and the Constitution. Issue preclusion, law of the case doctrine, separation of powers, no liberty interest, doctrine of consular non-reviewability. None of these arguments cure the government's wrong that Judge Moran cured. What the government did was wrong, and Judge Moran sought a reasonable way to apply the statute, and he should be affirmed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Flessner. So, Mr. Stone, your time expired, but we'll give you a couple of minutes.
I'll make it brief. One important point is the government has never argued that LPRs and citizens, and those claiming to be LPRs and citizens, can be stopped at pre-inspection stations. The officers there are not authorized to stop them. In fact, the treaty with Ireland prohibits that. LPRs and citizens, if there's doubt about their citizenship or their status as a lawful permanent resident, must be permitted to continue on to the United States.
Well, what if it's a student?
Well, Your Honor, even if it's a security issue, they still have to be able to travel to the United States to have that adjudicated.
Even if it's just someone who was in the United States on a student visa, and then he's going home and now he's coming back, they have to let him through?
If the student visa has been revoked, no, Your Honor, they...
No, he shows up, he has his student visa, and they say you're a security risk, but they...
Your Honor, that's not a ground to stop someone from coming in the United States if they have a visa. The visa is revoked while they're abroad because they're security
risks,
I understand. That would be...
So, one of the things you said in your main argument, I've been thinking about, in response to my hypothetical about the Mexican, happens to be in Shannon Airport, you say, well, in extraordinary circumstances, there would be a remedy. What did you have in mind?
Well, I didn't, Your Honor.
You did. You said
that. I said that there might be.
What would that remedy be in those extraordinary circumstances?
I don't know what those would be, Your Honor.
Do you think there are? Okay, what would the remedy be in my case?
That the immigration officer or revoking advance parole because they just don't like Mexicans anymore might be.
Okay, so what would the remedy be?
For an alien outside the United States, the remedy is to go to the United States consulate. You can apply for waivers of inadmissibility. So for an alien who doesn't have who's inadmissible for example, not having advanced parole, can apply for a waiver of inadmissibility. An alien can apply for an immigrant visa, which is the equivalent of adjustment of status. There's a number of other applications that can be made there.
Those are all discretionary, though.
Ultimately, they are, Your Honor. And that's a parole, an advance parole.
So there's no remedy. There's no legal remedy, in your view. And the Mexican goes to the consulate, and the consul officials say, yeah, actually, we have enough Mexicans in the United States, thank you. So go back to Mexico, right? Now, would there be a legal remedy? Would there be a judicial remedy for that?
There is some review from consular decisions. It's very circumscribed and very narrow. But there is some review. And I, unfortunately, can't give you the full scope of that.
So are you saying that Samira just failed to exhaust his administrative remedies?
Well,
this is a new one. I haven't seen this case.
We've mentioned many times before he could have gone to a consulate, applied for an immigrant visa, which would be adjustment of status. He could apply for a waiver of inadmissibility, which would waive him being inadmissible.
This is one of your arguments? I didn't remember it from your brief.
Yes,
exhaustion of failure to exhaust administrative remedies?
I don't know if it was mentioned as failure to exhaust administrative remedies. It was mentioned.
That's what it sounds like from what you're saying. Now, of course, we talk about failure to exhaust administrative remedies when there is a legal remedy, a judicial remedy at the end. That's the significance of failure to exhaust. So are you saying that if he had gone to the consular office and so on, he could then have appealed and to a court, there would be some judicial remedy?
Yes, it is circumscribed.
Circumscribed now?
It's not.
Where would he go?
It is here.
He goes to the consul general in Jordan.
Correct.
Gets turned down. Where does he go? Where does he find a judicial remedy? Can he do that in Jordan?
I can't tell you the exact scope of review from that. It is very narrow compared to what the scope of aliens in the United States.
I'm just asking about venue.
But aliens in the United States have access to the full judicial proceedings here because due process attaches, and aliens outside the United States have access to the consular adjudication. And as limited as it may be, they can seek these different remedies. One of the cases we cite is Saavedra Bruno. In that case, the alien wasn't able to challenge a consular decision not to issue a visa because it was determined that he was involved in drug trafficking. So there are limits to the review of those decisions.
Could Samira, suppose Samira had came back after he's turned away at Shannon, he flies to Canada and then he sneaks over the border into the United States. What would his status be?
He would again be an alien present without legal authorization, and he would be.
But would he be able to continue with his application?
No, Your
for
Honor.
Adjustment of status?
It would be abandoned because he's outside the United States, but he would be placed in Section 240 removal proceedings.
Abandoned because he's out of the United States? But he had advance parole. That's not. You don't abandon your... When you leave the United States under advance parole, you haven't abandoned your adjustment of status application.
Once the advance parole is revoked, if he's outside the United States without a granted advance parole, and the regulations do require that he be paroled on his arrival at the border into the United States. If that doesn't happen, then his application is deemed abandoned. So he would be, if he snuck into the United States, he would be placed in Section 240 removal proceedings. But his prior application for adjustment of status would be deemed abandoned.
But he would have a removal proceeding in which he could contest whether he was a security risk, right? He could say, look, they wouldn't let me back in because they said I was a security risk. I want to pursue my adjustment of status application. I am not a security risk. I can prove that. It's true I shouldn't have snuck back in, but it was the only way I could possibly get an adjudication of whether I'm a security risk.
Well, he couldn't challenge the... revocation of his advance parole. That was a discretionary.
I'm not saying that. He comes back. He's back in the United States. He wants to pursue his adjustment of status application. You say it's void. All right, he files another application.
If he files another one and it's and the immigration judge wants to deny it on discretionary grounds.
But he doesn't want to disguise it because, look, he grants him a hearing,
right,
and he shows that he is not a security risk.
Right.
And then the immigration judge could say, well, all right, fine, and you can have adjustment of status, right?
Yeah, Your Honor, if the immigration judge would deny it because he's a security risk on
discretionary
grounds,
but he wouldn't. He might not. Look, the point is, if he sneaks back in so that you have to commence a removal proceeding, he gets a hearing, and he can contest this. He doesn't have an absolute right, of course, because it's all discretionary, but he has a shot at a hearing. And
yes, Your Honor, he could certainly put forward evidence of that.
Right.
I want to make sure I understand this. The United States government is saying the only way this man would be entitled to a hearing on his status in this country is to sneak in.
Well, no, Your Honor. If he arrives at a port of entry, he would access to expedited removal proceedings also.
Expedited.
Yes.
You mean he could go back from Shannon to Jordan and then fly? Can he? Are you saying he can
flight?
Now come into the United States?
He needs a better travel agent.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
He needs a better travel agent.
Perhaps. Or he needs to
have
better friends.
But if he can't fly in from Jordan or wherever because they won't issue him a visa. But if he sneaks into the United States so that he has to be removed, then he gets his hearing.
That's
utterly preposterous. That is everything you say makes the government's position more ridiculous.
Well, that's the nature of
no, that's not the nature. That's not the nature of it. Can't be that. The law can't be that ridiculous.
Well,
now, of course, you don't think it's ridiculous. You think it's fine. Because you don't say anything in your brief to suggest there's a problem here. You don't acknowledge there's a problem. As far as you're concerned, this is fine.
Well,
the setup is fine. Isn't that your belief?
The setup is the way it is.
It's fine, in your opinion. You don't want to change it.
Well, it's not my place to change it, Your Honor.
Do you have opinions?
It is the law.
Would you make a recommendation to the Justice Department that something be done? Or you just don't think about these things? You don't think about whether you're defending the indefensible.
We do, Your Honor. We think about the sorts of notices INS gives and make recommendations. We do attempt to improve situations where they can be improved.
You're going to recommend rewording this I-512 so that people know?
Your Honor, I believe our office may have actually made that suggestion in the past.
In the past? How long? How many years ago?
I can't tell you exactly. I spoke with someone.
And, of course, ignored.
But the fact is the regulation does still require that he have the advance parole, he arrive, and then he be paroled and actually paroled into the United States for the regulation saying that his adjustment application is not abandoned, taken
mm-hmm.
force. Unfortunately, I've run quite over, Your Honor.
If you have something further, go. If you can have time you need. I'm not.
Your Honor, I'd like to say is that this court made a decision in 2003. We believe it was correct, and we believe the proper way to correct that decision, if it weren't, was exhausted. It wasn't the proper course to keep the case going for another 8 years. Kuchana doesn't change that decision. In fact, Kuchana says that where the regulation makes an action discretionary, the regulation is not, the courts can't review that decision.
Right. That's a big change.
Doesn't even use the word discretionary.
Well, that weakens your case. The regulation doesn't even grant you discretion. It says flatly.
Please, Your Honor.
Yeah, go ahead.
The statute itself says discretionary. The statute is the source of the Attorney General's authority. The statute provides for parole.
Well, you're saying the regulation is invalid, that it took away discretion granted by statute?
No, Your Honor. It merely incorporated it.
There's no discretion in the regulation.
Your Honor, the regulation is implementing the discretionary statute. It is itself discretionary. Otherwise, I'm not sure how the regulation is.
You're saying the Attorney General cannot, by regulation, surrender discretion?
The Attorney General could, but the Attorney General
of course
hasn't done that here.
Well, there's no reference to discretion in the regulation.
No, Your Honor, that's because it's in the statute.
No, because it looks as if in the regulation the Attorney General has adopted a flat rule about the restoration of status to people who are granted this advance parole.
Well, Your Honor, the regulations also say that.
I mean, you talk about advance parole. You call advance parole a creature of regulation. That's your language.
Your Honor, in 245.2A4B, it says, the regulation says, travel outside the United States by an applicant for adjustment who is not under exclusion, deportation, or removal proceedings shall not be deemed an abandonment of the application if he or she was previously granted advance parole and was inspected and paroled on return to the United States. Your Honor, Mr. Samir was not inspected and paroled on his return to the United States. That unquestionably is discretionary, even if the court says, you know, forget it, not only is advance parole reviewable, but there is no conceivable justification for revoking it, then the Attorney General still has clearly the discretion to decide whether or not to actually parole him when he arrives. So this court's prior decision was correct. Cucciana doesn't change that. Even if it does, the actual decision to parole is discretionary and unreviewable, Your Honor.
Okay.
I've gone far too far.
No. We tormented you with questions. Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. And our next case is Lawson versus Verrucchi.